All right. Okay, we're going to start off this morning with a little game to test y'all's intelligence. You guys are 10th through 12th graders. I expect you guys to do better than the 7th through 9th graders. So let's start off. It's going to be a game of can you guess this slogan and what company organization it belongs to. So there's going to be a slogan on the screen, and you're going to yell out what company you believe it belongs to or group of people. You guys ready? Hey, hold that one for later. Okay, next, first one. Easy. Just do it. False. It's Adidas. I'm kidding. It's Nike. Or Nike, okay? Whatever you want to call it. It's Nike. Easy? Great. Okay. What about this one? Save money, live better. Wow. Obviously, I can't do Target here because I think I would get, like, people throw things at me. Okay. What about this one? Think different. Wow. You guys got that so much greater than junior hires. They were like, we don't know. You're right. It's Apple, okay? Which I think this is the perfect slogan for Apple because I think they're actually controlling all the way that we think because we all have their devices and they're secretly controlling our lives personally. So that is, I'm sorry, what? I have a conspiracy theory. Yeah, take that one and you guys can think about that later. Okay, what about this one? Yeah, we've seen this one a lot, but who does it actually belong to? False, actually. It's the California Milk Advisory Board. I don't know why you guys didn't know that one, okay? So write that one down for later. The California Milk Advisory Board actually coined the term, got milk. Well, a little change of pace. What about this one? FSM, yes. Yes, you did. You called it. Prophesying. Right, and so the thing about slogans is that often they're connected to the mission and vision statement of a company or an organization or a group of people. They help dictate what the aim, the direction, the strategy of that company is. They can even dictate the way you act, the way you think, what you believe, right? And so for Nike, theirs is just do it. And they're like, we're going to go out and make really great products and make people feel really athletic, like me, even though I'm not, right? Or it's maybe with Apple, like think different. They create innovative products because they're thinking differently about like, oh, what do people need? Or for FSM, man, if you go here and you're part of a cell group, man, our goal is to know Jesus and make Jesus known. That's going to dictate and inform everything that we say and do here. And as a follower of Jesus, and if you are a follower of Jesus in here, I think there's lots of slogans and mission or vision statements in the Bible that you could pull out. But I think there's one this morning that Gabby read so well, so thank you for doing that, on the spot, by the way. And it's in Mark chapter 5, verse 36. And I think this is one that we could live by, that we could let it inform every aspect of our lives. And it's when Jesus says, do not fear, only believe. Do not fear, only believe in Jesus and who he says he is and what he has done. And this is meant to shape every part of our lives, and we're going to see why this morning we can let this shape our lives. We can see what's going to give us the motivation to trust Jesus when he says this, and it in turn is going to lead us to trust Jesus more. Because in this miracle this morning, in this passage, we're going to see that we can trust Jesus specifically and that he has the power and the desire to heal. Both with the people we're going to see in this passage, but also for you and me this morning. We can trust Jesus because he has the power and desire to heal. I know most of us would say that we know he has the power to heal. You know, he calmed the storms and the winds when Hunter talked about last week with the disciples. Like, man, he has power. We know that. But I think it's just as important for us to know that he desires to heal us. He wants to heal you and me. And another way to put this, and I've been thinking on this quote as we've gone through the miracle series. This is said by Nick Roland, who's a pastor here at Fellowship, and I heard him over there in Big Church where all the adults go. And this is what he said, and he's talking about miracles and about Jesus. He says, not only do we see Jesus' power, but what he plans to do with that power. So not only do you see that he has power, but what he his will is, what he desires to do, what he's going to do with the power that's been given to him. What's he going to do with these miracles that he is performing? So this morning, we're going to learn more about who Jesus is, and I'm really excited about that. And before we jump into the actual passage, let's pray together, and let's ask him to show more of his this morning. So God, you're good, you're faithful, and thanks to the students in this room, and the leaders, and the staff. And Lord, may we just see have a better and more clear picture of who you are as we walk through this passage. Will you speak boldly through us? Will you stir in our spirit by your spirit and lead us to greater worship and praise of you and understanding of the gospel? So we're asking that you boldly move this morning. In your name I pray. Amen. All right. So as you've seen, this passage is pretty long. And if we had hours here, which I'm sure you guys would just love to hear me talk for hours, then we could go through every single verse and every single part of this passage. But Honestly, we can't. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look at this part of the three main characters of this passage. And we're going to see that there's a guy named Jairus. Say Jairus with me. Jairus. Great. Okay, that's his name. He is a father who's going to be in deep and immediate pain. Right, we're going to see him. He's going to approach Jesus because he is in a lot of pain, a lot of hurt. And then there's going to be a mystery woman. I say mystery woman because we don't know her name. It literally just calls her woman in the Bible. And so she is feeling a lot of hurt and pain too, but it's been for a longer period of time. And that's going to lead her to go to Jesus. And we're going to see their stories side by side. And we're going to find that we probably identify with Jairus and this woman more than we realize. And then at the end, we're going to look at Jesus, and we're going to see three new things about Jesus that we get to learn through the way he interacts with Jairus and this woman, and what he chooses to do, and why he chooses to do it. So with that, you guys ready to jump into the passage? Yes? You guys with me? Great. Okay, so we're going to jump in. Verses 21 through 29 are going to introduce Jairus and this woman to us. But first, we're setting the stage in verse 21. And it says, "And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea." Okay, so we see that we don't know if Jesus is like teaching or what he's doing with these people. All we know is that there's a great crowd of people around him. Probably shoulder to shoulder, there's just a bunch of people. But then Jairus comes on the scene. And this is the first thing we learn about him. He's one of the rulers of the synagogue. Which, does anybody know what a synagogue is? What was it? Someone said it, a Jewish church, yeah. So it's like where the Jewish people will go and worship or make sacrifices. So he is a ruler of the synagogue, which means he's probably well-known. He has power. He has influence. He's a spiritual leader in this community. He is respected. People probably want to know him or want to have a relationship with him, right? So he is a respected leader in this community. And then the next thing we see is why he's coming to Jesus. Jairus came to him and said, implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death." That's what's bringing him to Jesus. You can hear the franticness, the earnestness in his voice of, "My little daughter is going to die. I need help." And the next thing we learn is what he asked of Jesus. And he's like, "Jesus, please come lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live. Please come and she will be better." Those are the three things we learn about Jairus. And then we see that Jesus went with him. In this next section, as Jairus and Jesus and the disciples are walking to Jairus' house to go see his daughter, the next character enters the scene, and she's described as a woman who had a discharge of blood, which means she has a blood disease, right? And in this society, in this culture, to have that type of disease would mean that she'd be separated from the normal social scene, that she would be an outcast because of this disease. So she would not have the typical relationships that Jairus would have had or Jesus would have had. She would have been an outcast. And let's think about the implications of that for a moment. Let's try to put ourselves in her shoes. That'd be like walking into this room, walking into a cell group, walking into even your family's home or maybe a class at school or a sports team, and no one would really say hi to you. That's what the woman would experience every day because she's seen as a social outcast. Can you imagine how lonely and how hurt you would feel? And it's not that she just experienced this for like a week or two. It's been going on for 12 years. 12 years she's been experiencing this and this disease. And then this is the next thing we learned about her. We learned that she wasn't just like, "Oh, okay, like this is my life." She tried. She went to physicians. She spent all that she had, and she didn't grow any better. She actually got worse over time. Can you imagine how she may be feeling? And so then this is what leads her in verses 27 through 29. And I'm going to read it real quick. She comes to Jesus because she heard the reports about him and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "Even if I just touch his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up. And she felt in her body that she was healed of the disease immediately as she touches Jesus' garments. It's the first miracle we see in this passage, which, by the way, this passage actually has two miracles in it. So this is the first one. And like Hunter talked about last week, that Jesus had an immense amount of power, and we see it again displayed in this moment that this woman simply touched his garment, and a disease she had for 12 years was gone. That's crazy. And I wish we had more time to actually spend on that, but what I think Mark, the writer, is trying to get us to focus on is more so this comparison between Jairus and the woman. And so if you like charts, I'm a big chart fan, I would take notes here, and so we're going to see and how we can identify and what Jairus and the woman have to teach us this morning. And so for both of them, Jairus was a respected leader. But for the woman, she's an outcast. Two very opposite people. Someone that people wanted to be friends with, the other one, no one probably really was talking to her. But for both of them, they were hurting in different ways. And I would describe it as Jairus was experiencing acute pain, and then the woman was experiencing what we call chronic pain. And that might be kind of like some weird terms. I mean, I've heard that before, but I'll explain it like this. Acute pain is like whenever you're like walking around late at night in your house, it's really dark, you don't want to turn on lights, you don't wake people up, and then you just slam your foot into a table. Anybody ever done that before? Or maybe it's whenever you like hit your elbow against something, immediately you're like, my world is ending. This pain is unbearable, and you're trying to like cover up your tears like Matthew McConaughey, and you're like, oh my gosh, like I am going to die, like this is everything. Or for me, I look like Tobey Maguire, and so like I'm just like ugly crying, okay? And so it's an immediate pain. You're like, this has to be healed right now. Like this needs to be fixed. Yes, it happens when I stub my toe, but for Jairus, this was an emotional, relational, like spiritual pain he was feeling. Like this has to be fixed right now. My daughter, who I love most, is dying, and I don't know what to do. For the woman, the chronic pain, you guys know this about me. I'm a pretty big nerd, is what we would say, and I really like Lord of the Rings. And so when I think of chronic pain, I think of this face from Lord of the Rings, and Frodo literally looks into the camera, and it's this weight and like burdensome face, right? Has anybody seen Lord of the Rings? You guys, oh, wow, okay, thank you, great. Okay, so you guys understand what I'm talking about. And so for chronic pain, it's happened for months or for years, and it becomes so much a part of your life that it just is normal. For the woman, I think that's what she was feeling. For 12 years, like, oh, I just have this disease. This is who I am. Where I'm lonely, I feel hurt. Like, that's who I am. And it's never going to change. And so it becomes a normal part of the way that she lives. But what does that lead them to do, this feeling of pain? So for Jairus, it leads him to be desperate. He comes up to Jesus, he's like, please lay your hands on her. Like, you're the only one who can help me. Please, like, please come. Like, I need you. You're my last hope. For the woman, just a feeling of hopelessness. It's like, I've tried everything. And actually, it's not getting any better. It's just getting worse. So what's the point? Is anything really going to change? And when you look at this chart, you may think like, oh, like they're really different. And they are in a lot of ways. But I think what unifies them and what is the same for both of them is that they're both coming to Jesus as you're my last and my only hope. So both the respected leader, the one who's really well known, to the woman who like is not known in society are like, you are my only hope. You're the last one that I can come to. And I don't know where you're at this morning. I don't know if you identify more with Jairus and that this feeling of this acute pain where it's maybe you've been recently betrayed by a friend, and you feel it so sharply. Or maybe it's a boyfriend or a girlfriend, right, and you feel hurt by them. Or maybe it's you didn't make the sports team like you wanted, or you didn't get the grade, or you didn't get into the college that you desired, and you feel this acute, this hurt, and like, I'm desperate, I need to fix this, I need to do anything to not feel this way. Maybe you're there. Or maybe you feel more like the woman where it's like, I feel forgotten, or I feel lonely this morning. Or I've the effects of my parents' divorce, it's become a normal part of my life. And the hurt that I've experienced in that one from the betrayal of my friends, it just is normal, like I'm always gonna feel this way. Or maybe it's just chronic, just sense of anxiety and of stress of like, I have to perform all the time for my friends, for my family, for school, I have to get the right grades, I have to make sure that I do the best in my job or on my sports team so I can get into this college, I can live this type of life. And this anxiety and stress just weighs on you. And you feel it so much, you're like, this is just who I am. I've been there. I can feel that in a lot of ways. So wherever you're at this morning, I'm so glad that you're here. Because for Jairus and the woman, Jesus had an answer. And the same answer is true for us this morning. And it comes from verse 24. And it's so easy to glance over. So easy. It simply says, and he went with him. So Jesus went with Jairus. Jairus came to Jesus. He's like, please, please come. There's a crowd of people around Jesus. He probably could have easily been like, can you hold on a minute? I got to finish my teaching over here. Or he could be like, hey, actually, like, I need to pray about this, and then I'll come with you. No, he went. He immediately acted. He responded. He responded to Jairus being in pain. He's like, I will come with you. So what do you learn about Jesus? What's the truth we need to cling to? That Jesus steps into our hurt. willingly because he wants to, he desires to, he sees it, and he's like, I will go there with you. Same is true for Jairus and this woman. The same is true for you and me this morning. And the question, I think, is will we let him step into our hurts? Will we even acknowledge that we have hurt? So will you let him? So this is concludes the first part of the passage, and we're going to move to the second part of the passage. And in this middle part, which is verses 30 through 34, if you're following along in your Bible, it's going to feel much like one of these movies, okay? Not in quality, because some of these are horrible, okay? So except for Catching Fire, I think it's the best movie adaptation of a book ever, and you can talk with me about it afterwards if you want to, but I think it's great. But Eclipse, it's awful, it's awful. Okay, so, but here's the point. These are middle movies, okay? The point of a middle movie is to connect the first movie to the last movie so that you know what's going on, okay? So if you miss the middle movie, if you miss Catching Fire, you're going to miss some characters, some plot lines, and you're going to be confused if you watch the finale and be like, what is going on, okay? Probably not with Eclipse or Twilight because really they don't matter, okay? But with the other ones, sorry, is that too harsh? Sorry. But that the point of the middle movie is there are characters and things that you have to see to understand why characters do things in the end. And the same is true for this passage. We're going to look at what Jesus does in these next four verses, and it's going to give us understanding as to why he does what he does at the very end. So let's jump in. So remember, verse 30, this is right after the woman has touched Jesus' garment and was immediately healed. And this is, you know, the natural question that, you know, Jesus asks next. He's like, well, who touched my garment? Like, literally, that's what he says. Like, who touched my garment, right? And let's I don't know if he said it that way, but let's think about this for a moment. There's a great crowd around him. It's probably like walking the halls of, like, Bentonville or BHS West or, like, Harbor or Rogers or Heritage. You're, like, squished together. You're like, I don't know. There's so many people around me. Or trying to leave, like, a concert at the Amp, and you're like, I can't get anywhere, right? And so there's so and so his disciples rightly respond with, Jesus, you see, like, what's happening right now, right? Like, and you're asking who touched you? What? Like, what? Like, what? I literally think that's what they'd be like, excuse me? And like, what is going on, right? And yes, I think they'd be confused, but I think also there's probably a deeper level to it. They're like, Jesus, we're on our way to heal a girl who is dying. What are you doing? I imagine like Jairus, I bet his hands were sweating. The father is like, whoa. Like, we have to go save my daughter. Why are you asking who touched your garments right now? And then we're meant to feel the tension of this moment. Like, why is Jesus doing this? And then so Jesus, he continues, and he doesn't just stop and ask who touched his garments. He looks for her. He continues to be like, who is it? He knows who it is. He's sovereign. He's in control. He knows all things. So he knows who it was. But he wanted to draw her out so he could have a conversation with her. Like, she comes before him and tells him the whole truth. I don't know how long that took, but it sounds like it was a conversation. So they're stalling. Jesus is talking to this woman, and he ends with, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. And if you're the disciples and you're Jairus in this moment, you're probably thinking, what is happening? Why is Jesus doing this right now? Why is he being distracted when we have a mission? You told me you're coming with me, Jesus. You promised me this. Why are you not coming right now? Why are you stalling? Because if we waste more time, my daughter may not make it. And this is the second thing we learn about Jesus, is that Jesus has a different timeline than us. His sense of urgency when he plans to do things is different than ours. And he's good in the timeline that he chooses. Right? And this, as a believer, I think is one of the hardest things for us to understand. Because I know I've been there. I'm like, Jesus, I've been praying about this for my family for years, that my family members will come to know Jesus. Or I've been asking for this for months, and like nothing is happening. Jesus, where are you? Why are you stalling? It's because he has a different timeline. He sees things differently than we do. And the best way I know how to show this is through this example. Raise your hand if you've ever been to a parade. Huh, right. Literally, like, half the junior highers raise their hand. I'm like, have you never been to a parade? What in the world? Okay, so imagine you're at the Macy Day Parade, right? And this is your vantage point. Apparently, Spider-Man is, like, the theme of the morning. But this is all that you see. You see this giant Spider-Man, like the blue and red and dressed up people. You might know a few people next to you, some people next to you, but really all you see is this. This is all that you see, right? It's a great view. It's pretty awesome. But what happens if your vantage point is this? Right? Yeah. You see Spider-Man, you see everything that's up the street, that's this way, you see side streets, you see so many people surrounding you. You can see the bigger picture. You know what's coming and what's happening. That's how Jesus views time and our circumstances. He has the bigger picture. He knows what's already come and he knows what is coming. He sees the people around you. He knows what is best. So his timing is good because he knows the bigger picture. And so why did he stop and talk to this woman? Because he knew it was best. Because he knew that this woman not only needed physical healing, but she needed emotional, relational, and spiritual healing as well. Can you imagine 12 years of being an outcast? Like, she needed to be affirmed in front of the people that were mocking her and accusing her. And Jesus publicly was like, hey, I'm for you. You've been healed. You're no longer sick. She needed that. And Jesus knew that, when Jairus and disciples couldn't see that. And I also think there's another purpose behind this, in that Jesus knew that Jairus needed to see that. He knew that Jairus needed to see him heal this woman and desire to heal her. Because Jesus, like we said, has a different timeline. He sees the bigger picture. He knows what's about to happen next, and he knows that Jairus needs to trust in who he says he is. Because the very next thing the Jairus gets is this truth, or not truth, sorry, this statement, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? Someone came from his house and said, sorry, she didn't make it. His worst fears have come true. Can you imagine what Jairus is feeling? Probably fear, anger, maybe potentially at Jesus. Like, I don't know exactly what he's feeling. I could only imagine confusion. Like, if he hadn't stopped, we would have been there by now. And this is when Jesus says the slogan, the mission and vision statement we looked at. He says, do not fear, only believe. How do you feel about that? Right after, that's not how you comfort somebody. I was like, when I first heard them, I'm like, whoa, that is not good. But I think as I read it, as I studied and prayed through it, like, that actually this is a comfort statement. Jesus is not saying like, okay, just have faith. You're fine. Go, like, you're good. That's not what he's saying at all. That's not what he means when he says that. I don't know exactly how he would have said it, but I would imagine that Jesus would have been so gentle and gracious and firm in how he said this to Jairus, and looking right at him, he would say, do not fear, only believe. Because how could Jesus say that? Because he knew what was coming next. Because he saw the bigger picture. He knew what was about to happen. So that's why he takes Jairus and James and John and Peter, his kind of inner circle of disciples, and he takes them to Jairus' house. And this is what they see. They come up to the house, and there's this commotion. There's this people weeping, and they're wailing loudly. And honestly, it probably sounded something like this, like Mariah Carey dubbed out, or like Fergie singing the national anthem. And you're like, this is bad. Like, this is awful. And there's, because in this culture, whenever someone died, they would hire professional mourners to help them grieve. And they would come and wail. It would help the grieving process. And so can you imagine? This is like, be like Fergie times like 100. And this is what Jesus is like walking up on. And this is when he says, why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead. She's just sleeping. And they laughed at him, which is what some of us might want to do right now. Maybe some of them were frustrated, like, how can you say that? We saw her. She's not alive, Jesus. How can you say that? We're grieving right now, and how could you say that to us? Once again, Jesus knows what's about to happen. He knows what he's going to do next, and he also knows that he has the power to raise her from the dead. Although Jairus and the disciples and the people don't see that yet, he knows. And once again, we see him in verse 40. He steps into Jairus's pain, and they enter into the room. They put everyone else outside the house. They enter into the room where the girl was laying. I want you to imagine with me what that scene must have been like through the perspective of Jairus the father. So you're walking, Jairus the father is walking in, and he sees his daughter laying on the bed. She's not breathing. And hours earlier, she was alive. And Jairus was sitting at her bedside, kneeling next to her, holding her hand, comforting her, loving her, saying, hey, everything's going to be okay. Knowing that it's not getting better, he doesn't know what to do. And then, so he's kneeling there, and then somebody comes in. They're like, hey, Jesus is in town. This guy, he's done miracles. He can help your daughter. Let's go get him. So then Jairus, still holding his daughter's hand, says, hey, there's a guy here who can help you. His name is Jesus. I'm going to go get him. And I'll be right back, I promise. And everything's going to be okay. I promise. I'll be right back. So he lets go of his daughter's hand, and he leaves to go find Jesus, feeling hopeful. And the daughter, feeling hopeful, and also like, oh, I trust my dad. I love him. I know he's going to come back. But then time goes on, and he doesn't come back. Can you imagine the fear and the hurt that his daughter was feeling and felt? Now imagine Jairus walking into that room with Jesus and James and John and Peter and his wife and feeling the weight of, I wasn't there. I wasn't there for my daughter. The sadness, the hurts, probably the anger that he may have been feeling at Jesus still, like, oh, why did this happen? That's the scene. But instead this time, instead of Jairus taking his daughter's hand and kneeling down next to the girl, it's Jesus. Jesus kneels down next to this girl. He takes her by the hand and he says, Talitha kum, which means little girl, I say to you, arise. And that term little girl, it's more of a family name. It's like a personal name. So it's probably best translated sweetheart. So like, sweetheart, I say to you, arise. What is Jesus doing? He's playing the role of father. He's stepping in where Jairus could not save. As much as he loved his daughter, he did not have the power to save his daughter. Only Jesus did. And he knew that. And Jesus had the power and the desire to heal her. So he takes her hand and says, sweetheart, I say to you, get up. With the same power, with the same voice that calmed the storm with the disciples that we learned about last week, he says, get up. And immediately, breath comes back to her. Life comes back to her. She starts walking around. There is new life given to her simply by Jesus saying, hey, it's time to get up from your nap. Last thing we learned about Jesus, he gives new life. He alone has power to give new life. And I can identify with that little girl, not that I was resurrected, but that he's given me new life. He's the only one who had the power to give me new life. Same is true for you and for me still. He alone has the power to give us this new life that we need. And ultimately, this miracle, this story, it points to a greater miracle that happens a couple of chapters later in the book of Mark. It's a miracle again where Jesus gives new life. But this time, he has to give his own life. And instead of the daughter who feels forsaken and alone by her dad, it's Jesus who cries out on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you left me? And instead of this little girl, Jairus' daughter, dying, it's the Son of God who dies and is laid in the tomb. And at the end of the story, there's a resurrection. 3 days later, Jesus rises again to give new life to you and to me. And it's through looking at Jesus' willingness to be broken on the cross, and that leads us to believe and trust this statement when Jesus says, do not fear, only believe. That's the only way that we can let this motto change our lives. That's the only way that we can let it shape our lives, is by looking at Jesus' willingness to give up his own life so that we could have new life. Because ultimately, we can trust that Jesus has the power and the desire to heal. And that is best displayed through his life and his death and his resurrection from the cross. And you might be thinking now, how do you trust Jesus? You guys say that a lot. Like, what does that even look like? What does that mean? I don't know if I trust Jesus. All those things are so valid, and we're glad you're here if you're feeling that way. But I think a good next step in building trust and taking a step towards Jesus is just being honest with yourself, with him, and with others. And so we're going to end with these three questions, and I only want you to think on one of them this morning, but I want you to write the rest of them down or take a picture of them so you can process them later this week. And all these questions correlate to a truth that we've learned about Jesus. So maybe this morning you need to answer, have you allowed Jesus to step into your hurt? Are you acknowledging that you have hurt? Or maybe it's you need to answer, where do you need to trust his timing and his goodness in that timing? Maybe it's timing with friends or with college or with school. Like, where do you need to trust him? And then last, where does Jesus need to give you new life? Is it with a sin struggle? Is it with hurt or pain? Is it with just a desire to want to follow him and not have to feel like you're just going through the motions? Where do you need Jesus to give you new life? Because in answering these questions and writing them down, talking to the Lord, and I'll challenge you to share them with your cell group leader or someone who disciples you, that's where you can take the step towards trusting Jesus as you bring these things to him. Because we know that he has the power and the desire to heal us. Let me pray for us. And then it'll take a minute in answering those questions as the band plays behind you. God, you're good and you're faithful. And thank you again for this morning. Thank you that you're a God of miracles. You're a God who wants to heal us, who wants to step into our pain, and you're also good in the timeline. And when you say yes and when you say no, so help us to trust you in that. And may we be bold to be honest with you this morning. And may we walk away wanting to trust you, wanting to follow you, and falling more in love with you, and having a greater picture understanding of who you are, Jesus. And so we ask all these things in your name. Amen.